And I think part of the reason I've been able to continuously pursue a creative career and always feel like I have fresh ideas and always find ways to connect, you know, disparate ideas and try to build bridges between disparate ideologies and groups of people is because my brain is never in one spot at one time.
Hey, yo, busy brain. Welcome to my podcast. I am Camden Hainsworth, ADHD advocate, coach, and member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Understanding my own ADHD diagnosis completely changed the course of my life for the better. Now it is my mission and joy to provide you with the tools to do the same. Join me weekly. Let's create real results that work with your neurodivergence and reflect a confident life of self-acceptance, growth, and satisfaction. Welcome to the Busy Brain Saint podcast. Let's get growing. Hello, you made it. I'm so happy that you are here. My brain is busy and my heart is full. Today's episode is a special one. It's titled Artistry, Identity, and ADHD, a conversation with Esther Hi'iliani Kandari. Esther is a figurative artist based in Utah. She explores multiracial identity, gender, and the female gaze within its context of religion, ecology, culture, and sense of place. Raised in Hawaii, in an Asian American mixed race household, she holds a BFA from BYU Hawaii, an MFA from Liberty University, and has studied at the New York Academy of Art. Apart from her studio work, she teaches art courses at Southern Virginia University, manages programming for RIT and Vision Gallery, serves as the art editor for Wayfair Magazine, and is a board member of the Faith Matters Foundation. Currently residing in Utah County with her husband, two rescue dogs, and growing collection of houseplants, I am so excited for you to listen to this incredible interview and conversation with Esther. Thank you so much for listening today. Remember that your reviews are always greatly appreciated, and let's hop into the conversation. Esther, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
I saw Esther present at the latest Faith Matters presentation and conference and was so moved by her, both on her panel as well as on the big stage. And she mentioned that she had ADHD, I think a couple times during that conference. And so, of course, it caught my ear and it caught my heart to see someone that is so impactful in the LDS culture, in addition to the world, may I add, who's so passionate, who also has a busy brain. And as an ADHD coach, that's exactly the message that I want to get out there, is that ADHD exists. It can be a massive challenge, and yet we as people are incredible humans, and we can overcome and we can work through our challenges. Esther, will you tell us a little bit about your background and how you became an artist and an advocate?
Totally. So you kind of covered the basics of my bio there, but I was born and raised in Hawaii. My dad's an immigrant from the Philippines. My mom is kind of your typical white Mormon American with some Utah and California roots. And so it was really fascinating upbringing, being raised in that, you know, very diverse household, but then an even more diverse community with a lot of strong ties to the broader Polynesian community. And so I always grew up with a very astute awareness of the diversity around me and the different ways that people approach the world and the ways their cultures influence that, both, you know, through practices and through aesthetics, many aspects of our lives. And specifically within church circles, how different that could look and the beautiful richness of different approaches to living the gospel from a cultural lens. And then as far as art, both my parents studied art in college. My dad's a professional designer, so I grew up surrounded with that type of dialogue and a lot of exposure, but didn't really seriously pursue it until college. And I think what drew me to it mainly was visual art's ability to communicate in ways that aren't limited in the ways that like written or spoken language are limited. Mm. Having lived overseas and traveled, and, you know, if you've ever spent time in a country where you don't speak the language and the majority of the country doesn't speak the language you speak, it becomes very quickly apparent what those limitations are. But you usually end up resorting to things like pantomimes and sketches and the ways that we as humans can communicate in, you know, the most difficult of circumstances when there's a language barrier. So that always just fascinated me, that far-reaching power that we have by creating images. Cool. And yeah, so just kind of those experiences all coming together is, in short, what got me where I am today.
Thank you. That was so concise and beautiful and inspiring. Isn't it awesome? I'm like totally reminded of this one time I was in Walmart taking something back, returning it. And the poor woman working at the counter couldn't, I mean, bless her heart, she really couldn't be a little bit more creative. The man that was trying to return something, he clearly didn't speak English. And she just kept repeating that sentence over and over and over. I'm like, oh, sister, please just like draw something or say the sentence in a different way. Or, you know, so to your point, it is an amazing thing that happens when we branch out into that creativity of art and interpretation. And man, you do such an incredible job. I just want to compliment you here.
Thank you.
You probably don't need my compliment, but I am so inspired. I think one of my very favorite depictions that you've done is of Heavenly Mother as a Hawaiian woman. And at least that's how I interpreted it. I don't know if that, if you know what I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah. So it's supposed to be a portrait of Heavenly Mother. It's not necessarily specifically Hawaiian. My model's actually mixed Tongan and I think Fijian.
Thank you.
More just kind of
clarification.
Broadly, there's sort of a modern Pan-Pacific culture, Pan-Polynesian culture with a lot of overlap in symbols and aesthetics. And so I was mostly just trying to tap into sort of that broader culture that I think a lot of specific cultures could relate to.
Excellent. Thank you for the clarification. It helps bring even more meaning. Thank you so much for your work in specific and then for your work that you're doing to expand the way that we visualize the scriptures and the gospel. You are such a mover and shaker in that area. So thank you for that work. So I'm going to go ahead and move a little bit into ADHD. Let's go ahead and start maybe with your story of your ADHD diagnosis. What age were you diagnosed and what led you to that diagnosis, please?
So I grew up with sort of a general awareness of ADHD as a diagnosis because one of my brothers was diagnosed when I was a kid. And then I think two more were diagnosed after I'd left for college. So I knew it ran in the family. I kind of, you know, understood some of the basic classic symptoms of it, but both because my direct exposure was from a male perspective of what it manifests as, and because the majority of the literature historically has been from a male perspective, I never even considered that I might have it until probably about 2 years ago. And I don't remember exactly what sparked it, but I think, you know, it must have been just one of those social media algorithms. You know, I saw a meme that was like, oh, I really relate to that. And I clicked on it. And then it just, you know, starts the rabbit hole of the social media algorithm. And more content started popping up. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is exactly how my brain works. And these are all the shortcomings that I've really struggled with my entire life. And I think part of what brought that to a crux and made me really realize what exactly those shortcomings were was the pandemic and sort of the whole world getting upended and a lot of big shifts in my life with wrapping up graduate school and moving across the country and being somewhat recently married. And it kind of poked a hole in all of the coping mechanisms that had gotten me through high school and through undergraduate and made me have to face, okay, this is really not functioning in my life. What is it? Like, where have things gone wrong? Like, what do I need to do to address this? Because it's not working like I think it should. And so finally, about a year ago, I was like, you know, I'm pretty sure I have ADD. You know, I think there's some anxiety and depression mixed in there. I don't know, you know, which one comes first because they're kind of a chicken and egg
situation. Chicken or the egg, yeah, totally.
And so I was like, I'm finally in a place mentally where I feel like I can go and like address this head on and, you know, privileged enough to financially be able to do it as well. I have some insurance that'll cover it. So I was like, I got a recommendation from a woman in my ward who had also been diagnosed as an adult. And she's like, I have this amazing doctor who specializes specifically in women's care and understanding how specifically your hormonal cycle and taking into account your long-term family planning and fertility goals and all of those things. And I found that very appealing because oftentimes I feel like I go into doctors and they give you just a very generic, you know, here's the standard diagnosis, the standard procedure, you know. Here's the pharmaceuticals that I'm being paid to tell you I think you should take.
The holistic approach is very unique.
Yeah.
What you're saying.
And so this doctor, you know, does prescribe pharmaceuticals and I'm on two different prescriptions right now. But I liked knowing going into it that she wasn't just going to check boxes, that she was going to take in consideration my personal circumstances and goals. And she's been amazing, really life-changing. So I went in, I was like, hey, here's all the things that like aren't working in my life. I think I have ADD. And she's like, yeah, you most likely have ADD. Let's do, you know, some testing. And one of the funny things that she asked me, she's like, tell me a little bit more about your family history. And I said, oh, you know, my dad's an immigrant. My mom's kind of, you know, typical Mormon pioneer stock. And she started laughing, not like in a derogatory way, but in like, oh, your life makes sense sort of way. Mm. And she said, one of the funny genetic things about ADD is that it has a strong genetic presence in migrant and immigrant populations. And so it's very prevalent within Mormon populations, especially if it's a Mountain West Mormon population, because the people who are most likely to have taken the risk to come across the plains and to settle in Utah were more likely to have those predispositions. And then people that take the risk to immigrate to the United States are more likely to have those predispositions. And so you've kind of got the, you know, the perfect crossroads of genetic possibilities for it.
Okay. Yeah, that is like extraordinary that you have found a clinician that is so informed that way.
Yeah, she's amazing.
I am like jaw dropped internally right now.
Yeah.
I have interacted with so many ADHD clinicians, psychologists, psychiatrists, coaches. And over time, over the past 4 years of hyper-focusing, does that make sense to me? To have a clinician so prepared for that answer? I mean, yeah. Let's give her a round of applause. I'm so happy for you. That
totally, like, yeah.
Well, and then you bring that up. And so I'm just going to, you know, go on top of that with my own ADHD, is that I was going to bring up adoption because my daughter's adopted. And the same way that your awesome clinician knew about that tie, it's been really interesting for me to hear about the prevalence of ADHD within adoptees, coupled with trauma, a lot of additional factors. I feel like this is a good time just to highlight that intersectionality is mm-hmm. real, and understanding your ancestry can really help in many ways you understand yourself. Wow.
So we did one of the, you know, clinical tests, came back with the results. And again, she's like, you're on like the 99.9th percentile. So it's absolutely clear. Yeah.
That's validating.
Yeah. I don't know. It felt like all the gaslighting I've been doing to myself, and to some extent the gaslighting the world had done to me as a woman, was like, oh, I can let go of this now. Like, I have a number I can put to it, and I can address that now, because it's not just something, you know, quote unquote, in my head. It's something I can structurally understand.
Bless you, Esther. I'm so happy. I'm glad that it was a relief. I'm glad that you had that shift. Do you feel like it was a quick shift, or do you feel like there was stuff you still are having to relearn as like, no, this makes sense. I have ADHD. I'm allowed to like lean mm-hmm. into this a little more.
Yeah. I think by the time I got to a point where I wanted to get diagnosed, I'd worked through a lot of the initial reactions of like, how do I feel about putting a label on myself?
Yeah.
And accepting this and understanding my worldview from it. So that really wasn't a huge shift. I think the biggest shift was just understanding exactly, I knew the results in my life. I knew what wasn't working, but having her guide me through, okay, this is how your brain is functioning. This is why you're getting those negative results. How do we redirect between those two things?
Right.
And so that was the biggest shift. I think mentally, I've gotten a lot better at being forgiving of myself when I do things that are just a result of having an ADD brain. But there's still the subconscious knee-jerk reaction that I think is especially cemented from being an oldest Mormon daughter in an Asian family.
Okay, like, you got a lot of things there. Yeah.
All the, like, you know, you need to be responsible.
Precise,
you
the
need to remember things. Yes. And so there's just so much that's ingrained from a young age, just from my environment, that I've had to let go of what it means to have a meaningful place in the world and to be a person of value and to be, you know, a quote unquote adult. And my family's been really great. And, you know, as my siblings and I have been diagnosed, there's been a lot of wonderful shifts as we've come to understand each other better. And my parents have really adapted to that. But there's just still so much that is an automatic part of your environment growing up that you have to unwire. And so I still find myself having to do that time to time.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Thank you for that very specific and honest perspective. Intersectionality is so important. Context is queen, right? Like mm-hmm. it's so important to understand who we are as an individual, in addition to the ADHD diagnosis and
totally.
Maybe what the textbooks can say. And mm-hmm. it's very clear that you have done that.
I did want to add just kind of a side note. Yeah, this is my
Please.
ADD brain being like,
yeah, no.
Thanks to comment.
You're
on.
Not going to be able to focus on the next thing yeah. until you say this. So you say it, sister.
I just wanted to clarify linguistically, one of the reasons I use Mormon in this context rather than Latter-day Saint even though I do personally view myself as a practicing Latter-day Saint, is that for me, that's come to be a term that I think encompasses people within a cultural unit, not necessarily just within a belief unit.
Faith unit.
And based on the circles that I've functioned in and all the great people I've been interact with, there's a lot of people that are very much affected by what I'd call Mormon culture, even though they might not consider themselves Latter-day Saint. And so I think it's important to delineate that, you know, if you come from pioneer stock, if you have cousins and family or parents that are still practicing the religion, there's ways that that affects you, even if you don't identify as a Latter-day Saint. So it's a much more overarching term for me than a religious specific one.
Yeah. I'm here for that awareness as well. That's so important to recognize. I hope that you are loving this podcast interview with Esther Kandari. I cannot wait for you to hear a little toward the end when she starts talking about rejection and how it shows up in the ADHD brain. I'm here to remind you of our incredible group coaching program called Mindful. If you are looking for affordable support for your ADHD brain, working with someone who understands the context of your life as a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you need to check out Mindful. Mindful combines coaching as well as education about ADHD. It helps you understand the root of your challenges so that you're not just slapping band-aids on the top of your struggle areas. You're really getting down to the foundational principles that are causing a lot of the pain to continue to come up and up and up over and over again when you are struggling in life. So check out Mindful, CamdenADHDCoaching.com/mindful for details. Change starts one step at a time. We can't wait to see you there. If we can shift into your professional life and the impact of ADHD, probably pre-diagnosis, in addition to post-diagnosis, and how you have seen ADHD impact your profession, your creativity, for good or for bad. We're here for all of it. This is just getting more information out there, more perspective out there.
So as far as professional context. So to explain kind of what I do, because I don't necessarily have, you know, a typical 9-to-5 job, which I feel like is pretty standard for people with ADHD.
Yeah.
I work basically as a freelancer. I do a couple main things. I run a studio out of my house. So painting different forms of art that I'm selling through various venues online, at pop-up shows, at some galleries I work with, etc. And then I also manage a gallery in Provo called Written Vision, which is this really fun sort of diverse, nuanced, religious art and literature space that's just such a fun cross-section of so many different worlds. And I get to interact with some really amazing people through that. But it's definitely a lot of operations, a lot of logistics that I have to consider on a week-to-week basis with that. And then in addition to that, I tend to be involved with, you know, a couple nonprofit organizations or ventures and things like that at any given time, or, you know, other sort of concise side projects that I'm working on. So like I just finished publishing a book. I'm on the board for the Faith Matters Foundation, working on some projects with them. And so there's typically at least 4 pots on the fire at any given time, if not more.
Hence the 99 percentile.
Yeah, totally. So I think the biggest shifts for me, and I think my professional life is probably the one of the main areas where it became clear that I was not coping well during the pandemic. Especially the shift to doing most things online, that having that physical stimulus of going into an office or interacting people in person, like one, had a big effect on like my levels of like depression and anxiety, but also had a big effect on my ability to focus and function linearly. Because if I'm just off in my own head, sitting on my couch, working on my laptop, I will completely miss meetings and forget what time it is and get totally sidetracked and forget what I was doing to start with. It was just kind of a hot mess. And yeah, I graduated from grad school. I got through that, but it was a struggle. And so understanding, one, what feeds my brain? Okay. What's that sparkle that I'm chasing, and finding ways to structure those sparkly things in my life as a breadcrumb trail for myself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's been big. And then also just going on medication. I'm on a fairly low dosage, and I don't necessarily want to be on it long term. I've talked to my psychiatrist about some ways that we can wean off of it and focus on more structural changes. But I feel like it was such a boon to be able to have the jump start of getting on medication. And having a kind of like parting the clouds and being like, oh, this is what it feels like to function.
Yeah. It's like bringing you to baseline is the way that I explain it is sometimes we're like drowning so much. We're so much below baseline of just like normal operation. We get ourselves there. Now we can breathe a little bit deeper, see a little more clearer and learn some skills. Like, okay, now that I know what my brain like can do, then let's learn some skills to facilitate this, whether on or off medication. It's awesome. Okay.
Yeah. And I feel like it helps kick me out of the constantly drowning mentality enough that I've been able to test out and implement different organizational structures.
Beautiful.
And I think the overarching themes with those is one, I need them to be as simple as possible. Complexity is my enemy, even though I'm always juggling a million projects. I need to find ways to simplify those million projects. And two, it needs to be as visual and as in my face as possible. That if it's on a shelf behind a door, if it's just a note on a calendar, I am not going to remember it. It needs to be an alarm screaming at me. It needs to be like a very simple color-coded agenda for the day that I have posted up where I can see it the entire day. It needs to be post-its on every single item in my studio reminding me what I'm doing with what. And that's okay. And it might seem a little frenetic from the outside sometimes. Letting go of that expectation of, you know, I'm an adult. I should be able to just put it into my Google Calendar and follow my Google Calendar and I'll be fine now. I'm not. Mm-mm. Like, that's not how I work, and it's okay.
I think there's, at least for me, I'm curious for you, there's a degree of process and almost like a dance that can happen when we have these external visual reminders that is also very glittery, is very sparkly. And whereas having something all in one place that we're constantly having to check over and over again, it loses its novelty. But doing a new note, putting it up with a different color, taking it down, it's this ADHD dance that I feel like is very filled with movement and life. And I believe that many people are going to hear what you do and say, oh, that's why I do it. You know, like that makes sense. And as an ADHD coach, also it makes sense in the underdevelopment of the frontal lobe, or if you don't like that word, then use a different word. But just understanding that our working memory often stinks and we can't hold everything in our working memory all the time, the same way neurotypicals can. Esther, like you get it for yourself and you've worked hard at that, because a lot of people that I do talk to are still in the process of figuring this out. I'm not saying it has to stay this way the whole time, but I just want to congratulate you, because that is beautiful. And I'm happy for you, honestly, to have found.
And for the record, I don't have it 100% worked out.
Of course not. None of us do. I'm here to compliment you on what you have done in that process. So do you find that by managing your ADHD, you've learned new things about yourself that you were unable to do when you were a little bit more of, let's say, a mess?
Yeah. The meme that I feel like encompasses my mental state for a good chunk of my adulthood, and I still feel like this semi-frequently, but I feel like I'm able to pull out of it faster, is that little one where it's somebody standing underwater and like they have their hand out and they're like, I'm fine.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
That's how I felt.
Yeah.
I think the things that I've learned about myself are more so reframing how I label my responses to things, especially the negative labels that I'd given myself. That I've always had, I like to call it kind of a mental allergic reaction to doing paperwork, whether that's taxes or, you know, any sort of forms, which when you run two small businesses like
inventory,
it's a lot of forms. Totally. And so that's something I was always getting behind on. And, you know, I still get behind on it sometimes. I would feed this self-perpetuating cycle of, I sit down to do it, I start to feel panicky, or I get distracted really fast. It's because I'm lazy. It's because I'm not smart enough. It's because, you know, it was something that I thought I needed to do, and so there must be a bad reason that I wasn't able to do it. And so reframing that as, I'm not able to do it because my brain's got some quirks. So how do I work around or with or supplement to address those quirks so I can do what I do need to do? Like, taxes aren't going away, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I don't have to beat myself up for feeling panicky when I have to do my taxes. And there's ways that I can help myself not feel that way without feeling like I'm you know, trying to put a bandage over some character or moral failing that I have.
What would you say to people that are feeling that way, that are feeling like, I'm just lazy, like if I really cared, I'd get the thing done? All those pre-diagnosis conversations you were having with yourself, what might you say to encourage someone in that situation?
I think for me, one of the switching points that helped me realize, okay, this is not necessarily an overarching character flaw. This is something that has some sort of diagnosis to it, was recognizing that I could be very motivated in other circumstances and that I was really good at getting some things done. That, you know, if you're not accomplishing anything in your life, you know, maybe you're depressed and there's some other issues that need to be addressed. Like there's lots of reasons people might be approaching the world that way. And, you know, some of them might be things that need to be addressed from a character or moral standpoint, but many other might be need to be addressed from a mental health or even physical health standpoint. But with specifically when it comes to ADHD, understanding, okay, there's topical trends with what I struggle with. And so what is causing those topical trends? Is this something that's just psychological? Is there, you know, some trauma I need to address in my life related to these things? And there have been, you know, some things related to that, but, you know, regarding to the way I view finances and having grown up as the oldest in my family and seeing my parents go through, you know, the tight years when my dad was in grad school and, you know, some of the bound up shame regarding, you know, when I'm not managing my finances well and how I feel about that because of the pressure that I saw in the family growing up. Recognizing those trends helped me to understand that I needed to address the topical root, not an overarching character root in my personal circumstances.
We do that, don't we? We all or nothing it. We black and white it. We're like, well, if I'm struggling here, I just always struggle. And I hear you like saying like, get down to the root of it, right?
Yeah.
I love that you're saying that. It's so important for us to constrain down to the moment, constrain down to that particular circumstance. Couldn't have read it better in a book than what you just said. That's lovely. I'd love to end here talking a little bit about, as you said, we're all a work in progress, right? But now looking into the future, understanding yourself, what does that look like for you? Anticipating, you know, the next steps in your life and knowing that you are juggling a lot right now. How do you optimistically look into the future knowing that you have ADHD?
Totally. I want to jump back a little bit and address intersectionality and how that affects some of my long-term outlook.
Good.
That I think one of the most fascinating things since I got diagnosed, and I've been fairly public with it since I got diagnosed, is how many conversations I've had with people, particularly within my Asian Pacific community and within my Mormon Latter-day Saint community, specifically with women, and how often I hear my own story parroted back to me, I was raised to believe that, you know, as a woman, I need to, you know, have all the strings of the household and I need to be managing everything. And if then I'm not managing everything, whether that's, you know, as a stay-at-home mom or, you know, as someone in school or someone who's working part of full time, that I'm less than, that there's a moral failing, that I'm not living up to what God wants me to live up to, or, you know, I'm not living up to my cultural expectations of who I should be. And so, as someone who has built somewhat of a platform for myself and has worked on exercising my voice within my community, I've very quickly felt that I have a responsibility to continue those conversations. That just by opening that door, I've seen so many people kind of breathe a weight off of their shoulders because they can say those words out loud, because they can reframe themselves in ways that no one had given them permission to do so before. And not that they need permission from me or anyone else, but I think
it helps.
Yeah. I think oftentimes, especially within a high demand religion, we feel like we need permission. And so finding ways to help people move past that is really important, I think. And then I think for me, career-wise and long-term, like family-wise, one of the things I've loved about my particular, psychiatrist, technically what she is because she specializes in women's care and like the full spectrum of women's care. We've had some really in-depth conversations about the way ADHD and pregnancy interact and my future goals for having children and for having a family and ways I need to plan with and around that and everything from, you know, supplementation to help my mental health when I'm pregnant and to help the neural development of a fetus through, okay, let's be honest, what is your capacity actually going to be when you're pregnant? And how are you considering your career goals in context of that? And it's been really wonderful to have these very shame-free conversations of like, I want to have kids, but I also want to have a career. And it can't always be 100% on both sides. There has to be some give and take over the years. And to not feel like I'm pressured to, you know, do one or the other of like, oh, you know, if you're not having kids right away, then, you know, shame on you. You're not doing what God wants you to do. Or if you're not giving 100% to this very promising career that you have, then, you know, you're throwing away the advantages that people have worked to give you in your life, or, you know, not trying to break the glass ceiling in ways that you should, or, you know, whatever it might be. You get shame and pressure
lots from both sides
of that conversation. Mm-hmm. And so to have, you know, both my husband, who's very supportive and understanding of this, and then a doctor who I've been able to talk through this, has been a really relieving experience, because I can feel like I can sit down and say, okay, what are my personal goals? What's the personal revelation that I've received? What is, you know, the things I'm counseling with my spouse on, what I want to do long-term, how is that all, you know, affected by ADHD, and how can I plan accordingly in a way that doesn't take into account any shame or pressure from irrelevant outside sources?
Wow. It does matter where the judgments are coming from, where the messages are coming from, and if we want to adopt them or if we don't. Mm-hmm. For people with ADHD, we often have trouble pausing.
Yes.
And when we pause on the outside, it's not always a pause on the inside, right? In our brain, we're taking in so much and just on hyperdrive. So, I mean, you're putting your work out publicly. You're putting your voice out publicly. You're putting out an extremely impactful and shaking message oftentimes with your work as well. Has RSD, and we can talk about rejection sensitive dysphoria, how that may impact you.
Yeah, and that's affected me greatly. And that's probably been one of the bigger things that is a succinct symptom that once I got diagnosed, just clarified so many things for me. That I'd had some experiences where I, you know, put myself out there in some way or said something, you know, maybe that I should or shouldn't have had in a public sphere, and had people respond very negatively to it within, you know, certain of my circles. And had really traumatic experiences because of that, that cognitively I was like, okay, you know, this is honestly just a couple dozen people saying some really harsh things on Instagram or whatever it might be. Some of them might be true. Some of them might not be. Why did I just spend 2 days in bed crying?
Yeah.
You know, I'm a grown woman. I shouldn't be doing this, but this is a physical reaction I'm having to this, and I don't feel like I can control it. And so being able to pinpoint me like, oh, that was RSD. That was literally a physical response to that.
I love the giggle behind your voice almost because that's self-acceptance, right? That's understanding to a degree, like, I know it's irrational, but my body's going to respond. It's going to. And now the compassion comes in, the awareness, the education comes in. So what do you do now when you're either facing or anticipating rejection sensitivity, or it's happened again and you're in it? Do you feel like you bounce back quicker, or what does it look like now?
I do, because I feel like I'm not feeding that positive feedback loop of I'm responding poorly, I'm a terrible person, so then I respond more poorly. I can be like, okay, I can put this on a shelf. I can sit here and eat half a tub of ice cream if I need to, or just, you know, curl up in blankets and cry. And I kind of approach it in some way like I do like PMS symptoms, where it's like, I know this is maybe not a quote unquote rational response to the world, but this is what my body needs to do today to work through these hormonal responses to things. And it's okay. I just am going to separate myself a little bit. And that's something else too that I've learned, is that I'm pretty good at recognizing when that rush starts to come on of like, oh, like, you know, the psychosomatic symptoms.
Yeah.
And so I'll tell myself, okay, if I'm responding to the situation this way, if there's any way I can extract myself from the situation, whether it's, you know, just logging out of Instagram for a few days, or, you know, not talking to someone for a few days, or, you know, leaving an event if I need to, and not engaging with it until I feel like I've stabilized again, because that's where I get myself into more trouble, is when I am responding in a disproportionate way because of my RSD, and then get a stronger negative response back or say things that I maybe don't truly mean or that aren't fully fleshed out or thought out. And so it's okay. In this world where we're so, you know, expected to respond to emails right away and expected to always respond to every single comment on Instagram, we don't have to. And even if people are like, why aren't you responding? Like, you should be saying this on social media. I'm like, no, like for my own mental health and for the sake of me saying things in a way that I actually believe and frame what I'm thinking well to the outside world, I'm just going to turn this off for now. And it's okay. And you can't shame me for that.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you for your perspective, for your story, for your honesty, for all of your incredible hard work. Of like learning this stuff about yourself and then sharing it as a professional, sharing it as like an incredible go-getter, multi-passionate baddie. Like I think that that is going to go a really long way for our listeners, for singles, for newly marrieds, for people with children, for everyone. Before we end here, any last thoughts you'd like to tell our listeners? Now that you understand yourself through the ADHD context a little more?
Totally. I think my closing thought would be that for me, I don't see ADHD as a handicap. I view it as the lens through which I experience the world and that lens can be very powerful. And that's something that, again, my psychiatrist has been really amazing with, is that she always says ADHD is a superpower. And if you view it that way, with all the pros and cons of having a superpower, that's when you can accomplish the most. And, you know, a lot of the, you know, real overachievers in the world and people that have gotten amazing things done have been neurodivergent, because it drives you to do things in ways that are sometimes irrational. Yeah. And it helps you to think outside the box. And I think part of the reason I've been able to continuously pursue a creative career and always feel like I have fresh ideas and always find ways to connect, you know, disparate ideas and try to build bridges between disparate ideologies and groups of people, is because my brain is never in one spot at one time. And so it's constantly like drawing threads and strings across the board, which when you look at it from the big picture seems really chaotic. But when I can see, okay, point A and B and C are connected now, what can I do with that? It's so powerful. And I wouldn't change that.
And the results are so clear in your work, the consequences of the hard to manage parts of ADHD and the massive creativity, like you're saying, and that superpower juxtaposition are so evident. Some the things you have created, I have never seen created in the way that you particularly do in our faith tradition. And I'm so grateful for your work. I'm so grateful for your story and for opening up this door a little bit to this corner of your universe with ADHD. Thank you so much for being here. Yep. Could you just let people know where they can find you if they're interested more in your art and what you're doing?
Totally. Best way to keep up with my work is typically Instagram. So it's just my middle name. So Ilani Fine Arts on Instagram. And I try really hard to build community with what I do. And I've been really blessed to have a lot of professional artists who have given of their time and resources and knowledge to build me to where I am today. And so I try to do that in return. So I hope people feel like I'm accessible. Now, again, I'm ADD, so sometimes I read a message and think I've responded and have not. It's never anything personal, but I really do try to respond. So if anybody wants to reach out and ask me questions, I will respond to the best of my ability.
You're amazing. Well, thanks again for being with us today. And listeners, I will put all of those links in the show notes down below so that you can partake of the beauty that Esther is putting out into the world. Thank you again, Esther, and take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Busy Brained Saint podcast. If you're eager to explore the world of ADHD coaching, make sure to connect with me on Instagram at Camden_ADHD or visit my website, CamdenADHDCoaching.com. For more LDS-specific ADHD content, don't forget to follow this podcast and join us on Instagram at The Busy Brained Saint. Listen, I'm here to support you on your journey. I cannot wait to have you as a part of our community. Stay engaged, stay inspired, and remember, you're not alone here. Thanks for being a part of the Busy Brained Saint family.